Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Tony Venuti is my name. The truth is my game. Hey. Your ex-conservative Reddywire from Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to another day in the life. Boy, things are getting great, aren't they, in our culture? You know, I talk about the economy being secondary to our culture. Our culture is going downhill by the minute. From the government administration office, right? What is it? Government Service Administration, the GSA? To the Secret Service? To talk on Fox News that prostitution should be legalized? The manifesto's coming true, folks. The communist manifesto's coming true. I don't know how much I got to keep telling you this, but nobody wants to talk about it whatsoever. Nobody wants to talk about it whatsoever. We have a lot going down. And it hasn't happened overnight. It's been going on for a long time. I've been watching it since the 50s. I'm your eyewitness. I'm your eyewitness account, man. Seeing it growing up, seeing misbehavior sort of be the norm, sort of starting to be sexy. The music of the 60s and the 70s, the pop culture, making all the things that were critical of authority, critical of parents, just like the manifesto states, discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. That's number 40. That's number 40 on the Communist Manifesto. And this was written in the mid-1800s when Karl Marx was 30 years old. Can you imagine that? It's a business plan for evil. Hey, I want to welcome my Facebook birthday friends, Child Quest, happy birthday. Constance Bumgardner, happy birthday. Dry River, happy birthday. James Martin, Jamie O'Donnell, Kimberly West, and Taft Rizerick, happy birthday. Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. Does 3,500 Facebook friends equal one really, really good friend that'll die for you? I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to put the sum of its parts being greater than the whole together. I guess if it was a union, I could amass some power and sort of show how the sum of its parts, the 3,500 Facebook friends, would be more powerful than the one real friend that I have. I mean, that's what unions do. Is they have you sign loyalty oaths in blood. All right, what do we got? I guess we have the presumptive nominee being more presumptive all the time, huh? With Mitt Romney, right? All right. Hey, everybody's going to get behind him, except probably the Ron Paul bots, because they essentially, you know, laterals on with liberals. Libertarians and liberals are all immature. At least the sycophants are, the followers, the voting bloc. The unemployed kids, the enabled kids, the 26-year-old children who are still getting benefits. All of that. But you see, for the past 3 years, I've been harping on, it's the culture, stupid, not the economy, the culture, You know, the number 15 of the Communist Manifesto is capture one or both of the political parties in the United States, and they've done that effectively. They've effectively done that. And the proof of the matter is, all you got to do is listen to O'Reilly. talk about the pop culture. You ready for this? Let's get a little O'Reilly here, and I can tell you firsthand what he isn't, all right? Let me just cue it up here, see if it's fine.
The only people who don't want to disclose the truth are people with nothing to hide.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. More madness in the presidential campaign. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Now, we knew the campaign was going to be bitter, with muck raking all over the place. We knew that. But we didn't know it was going to be downright hysterical this early. Last night, former Republican Party Chair Michael Steele was interviewed by Chris Matthews. Governor Romney, the topic.
You ran into a full word, Michael. You know you're saying there's no such thing as science.
But that's not what he said. Why are you putting those words in his mouth? He's never said he's a flat earth and he doesn't believe in evolution. Those are your words, Chris. And that's how you like to paint him to be.
Because that's who he is.
But that's not who he is.
Well, it's the grand wizard crowd over there. Anyway, look.
Come on, now what is this grand wizard now?
Okay, we say the far right party. All right, no, relax.
But true, Chris, can you give me a break? We didn't. Don't go there with me.
Okay, great.
All right.
Now, later in that broadcast, Matthews apologized for using the description Grand Wizard. I have no beef against Chris Matthews. He doesn't usually attack people personally. He's simply a committed Democrat. Nothing wrong with that. But to call Mitt Romney a flat earther, to say the governor doesn't believe in science, is simply madness. In a 2007 New York Times article, Romney said, quote, "I believe that God designed the universe and created the universe, and I believe evolution is most likely the process he used to create the human body," unquote. So there it is for honest folks, end of discussion. The problem for...
And see, quite frankly, that's exactly how I see it. I see God in charge of natural law. I see natural law as in charge of evolution. I also believe that the church is an institution that puts together beliefs and have formed doctrines, if you will. Now, I've got to be careful, Tony, because I'm stepping above my academia ability here. After all, I'm just a raw kind of guy, but...
American voters is that anything goes these days. The Internet is full of unbelievable nonsense as well as gross defamation. And now, on some national news programs, we're getting the same craziness. So if you're uninformed, how can you possibly know what's true?
The important thing is here that you be informed, okay? The important thing is here that you be informed. But watch how O'Reilly starts to give as much credibility to what's going on the web as to equalize it with what's going on in mainstream media.
Not true. And the problem is not exclusively on the left. How many times have we heard that Barack Obama was not born in America, that he's a Muslim, a Manchurian candidate?
Number 15 of the Communist Manifesto, capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. Understand something. Mainstream media is an obvious surrogate for one of those political parties. Fox is a surrogate for the rhinos, for the Republicans, because, number 15, capture one or both of the political parties in the United States, folks, they have. Listen to O'Reilly represent the rhinos.
A plan from outer space, whatever madness the anti-Obama forces can think of. We live in an age where truth really doesn't matter.
Anti-Obama forces. So is O'Reilly, when he says anti-Obama forces, is he discrediting the fact that there's relevance in what were anti-Obama about?
Not anymore. Greedy news executives and the net have obliterated it. Journalistic standards have collapsed. The Trayvon Martin case proves that.
Greedy journalists and the net. Greedy journalists in the net. I don't think so, O'Reilly. We're your town crier out there on the net. We're the guy out there in the neighborhood yelling aloud for those that wouldn't hear otherwise.
You can pretty much do anything you want in the media, and the courts don't care. It's almost impossible.
I talk about the mediocrity being the abuse of the First Amendment, because there's no doubt. You can say anything you want nowadays and understand something. That came right from the Communist Manifesto. This is Tony Venuti, folks. We're listening to O'Reilly. Oh, really, O'Reilly?
For a well-known person to win a judgment of defamation. But Talking Points has had enough. So every time I see craziness in the national media during the campaign, I'm going to show it to you. And I hope you will vote with the clicker. That's the only solution to the problem.
The investigation focuses on the electronic file.
That was Bill O'Reilly's talking point. On that same night, he was interviewing his usual guests that he's able to overwhelm quite efficiently. And they were discussing the fact that the liberals own the media, whether it's Hollywood. And O'Reilly just plain disputed that 100%. More disrobing. I'm telling you something, man. This guy is good as he is, and thank God we have him, but it's how bad he's not that worries me. You know, it's like a parent of two children. Both children, one bad, but the other not so bad. But it's the father who's using both children for his own selfish gains. And that's what I'm concerned about. This isn't what MSNBC does or the others. This isn't what O'Reilly does or the others. It's what those who are in control of the bigger picture are able to manipulate by playing both the right and the left back and forth from each other. That's the issue. You're listening to Tony Venuti, folks, on the ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. Jesus. Supreme Court signals it's okay with parts of Arizona's immigration law. They're really hitting a home run, huh? Obama's really doing pretty good, isn't he? Aren't they really smart? You see, we've got this thing called the Constitution and these people called Supreme Court justices, which in their elite mindset, liberal politicians have sort of co-opted and brought in with the help of Joe McCarthy's defeat as early as the 50s and with the media running lockstep for them. The U.S. Supreme Court indicated Wednesday that Peter is ready to uphold one of the most controversial parts of Arizona's immigration law, a requirement that police officers check the immigration status of people that think are in this country illegal. Now, let me ask you something. Is this really controversial? How did it get to be controversial? I don't think on its face there's anything controversial about it, except that it was made controversial. Justice Elena Kagan recused herself from the case because she has previously worked on it while serving as the Solicitor General. The four conservative justices, Roberts, Kennedy, Antonin Scalia, Samuel Alito, all asked tough questions of Arelli.
Arizona's controversial immigration law heads to the U.S. Supreme Court tomorrow. The Obama administration is going to challenge the law, which allows cops to check the immigration status of anybody they stop. NBC's Justice Correspondent Pete Williams joins us now with the details. Good evening, Pete.
Larry, good evening. Not just allows, but requires. Arizona says illegal immigration hits it the hardest, with a third of the nation's illegal crossings coming through its border over the past decade. So frustrated by what it considers lax federal enforcement, the state passed a tough new law 2 years ago. And most controversially, as you mentioned, it requires police making arrests or traffic stops to check the immigration status of anybody suspected of being here illegally and to detain them until their status can be verified. The Obama administration immediately went to court and argued that Arizona went too far and got the law blocked. The lower court said immigration is mainly a federal responsibility and agreed with the government that Arizona's goal of enforcement is at enforcement at all costs upsets what should be national priorities. The federal government also said that it's concentrating on the most dangerous illegal immigrants, those who commit crimes or present a risk of terrorism, and that Arizona would flood the system with anybody who simply fails to have the right papers. But Arizona will urge the Supreme Court tomorrow to rule that states can pass their own laws on immigration enforcement.
All right, Pete, just let me ask you, that word require, okay, is that the key issue in this, or is this really a states' rights issue?
It's states' rights. It's two questions. It's what powers do Arizona police have under current federal immigration law? Mm. Arizona argues that the current law already gives them the right to do this. And secondly, the states' rights points. Arizona says we're a country of powers reserved to the state. We don't need federal permission to do this.
All right, thanks very much. NBC's Pete Williams, thank you. States' rights appear to be at the core of this immigration debate. We're joined now by Tamar Jacoby. She's president and CEO of Immigration Works USA. And we welcome Alan Wilson, who's attorney general from South Carolina. Alan, as our own Williams just...
Now, this is from CNBC. Let's see how they spin it, huh?
Suggested. Federal law says that immigrants have to have their papers with them. They have to have their cards with them. So why shouldn't the state be able to card somebody that they come into contact with law enforcement? Why not?
Well, the state should be able to do that, and that's why we're in court tomorrow. I applaud Arizona in taking a leadership role in this issue. South Carolina is dealing with a similar issue. We have a similar provision that's being challenged, and we firmly believe that it was also noted last year in the Whiting case, which is another Arizona case involving employers' employees' licensing being used to punitively punish employers who fail to check legal status to e-verify. The Supreme Court has already upheld this as a right of the state to regulate this area of law and to augment federal law.
Tamar, with all that, I don't see what the beef is. Again, if the local cops stop somebody, look, they ask for their driver's license, they ask for their insurance card, they're going to ask for their immigration card. Federal law says that's what you can do. What's the issue here? I don't see what the brouhaha is.
So the issue for the Supreme Court is whether state law and federal law conflict. If they conflict, federal law trumps state law. And you're looking at the details, right? And the details seem reasonable. But the truth is that the theory behind the Arizona law, and it's stated right in the law, right, is a theory called attrition through enforcement. And what that means is Arizona seeks to make life so miserable for unauthorized immigrants that they drive them out of the state, that they drive them to leave the state. That is not federal policy. So, you know, looking at the details, it makes sense.
Let me go there. That's a very key point. Attorney General Wilson, does, in fact, in your judgment, the
spin, you're getting dizzy?
Arizona law seek to make life so miserable for Arizona illegals that they have to leave?
Well, this is a red herring. We're talking about what is constitutionally provided for. The state has powers reserved to it under the 10th Amendment. Anything that is not expressly prohibited by Congress, the bar is very high for what is impliedly prohibited. There's nothing prohibited in federal law that allows Arizona to allow its local law enforcement to supplement or augment and support a federal government who for years has complained of lack of resources. We're also dealing with an administration that, under the Justice Department, they say we're going to prohibit law enforcement, and they use the term racial profiling, but we're going to also mandate under the State Department, if you go to the State Department, there's a manual called the Access Manual that requires law enforcement to racial profile for purposes of getting people access to the
government. Profiling is really not
profiling. You know, you think with the Supreme Court these days, with health care, immigration law, you think Obama miscalculated? You think he went gulp? See, what we've done successfully in my day is have disregard for law enforcement, have disrespect. Now, understand something. I'm someone that had quite a bit of involvement, just negative, by having, the police on me, putting me in, interrogating me. I've got lots of experience with cops, but they're necessary, man. They're necessary. And I live in Arizona. There's all kinds of Mexicans in this whole state, south, north, the whole nine yards. They're left alone. I can almost assure everybody from my own personal experience that say someone has a license. Now, I understand something, folks. Is that too much to ask for? Say someone has a driver's license, an Arizona State driver's license, and someone is obviously Mexican, okay? Is it unreasonable for the police department having you show your ID when you stop for a red light or any other kind of normal thing in the course of living your life where cops might get involved no matter who you are, just simply say you got a license? Now, I would imagine that's as far as it'll go if the Mexican says in English, and you go, now he could be bilingual, he could be English as a second language. It might not sound like it's his first language, but I understand. I want to tell you something right now. A cop that pulled over somebody or stopped somebody to ask a question that involved his need to check someone's ID, like a license, understand most everybody has a license. And if they don't, they're stepping into a trick bag. I suggest you get one, even if it's fake, like I did when I was on the streets. You have to have an ID, man. It makes all the sense in the world. Now, here's the thing. When asked for your ID, if the cop can't speak a lick of English, doesn't common sense and logic allow you to consider that this just might be someone that needs to prove to me that he belongs here? If he can't speak a word of English, is that a tip-off? Is that unfair? I don't think it's one bit unfair, man. Jeez. You know, when thinking about these issues, you have to break it down to its most common denominator and look at it from its most simplistic viewpoint. If we think of the United States of America as our home, the home of the citizens to this country, the United States is our home. Like a big house with lots of rooms, only it's miles and miles of square miles. It's a big house. Are you going to let anybody go into your house, no matter how big or how small it is? Are you going to wake up one night to go downstairs to the kitchen and have a glass of milk or something, maybe grab some cookies? And have the barrio waiting for you there as if they belong to be there? Is it any different? This is our house, and it's a very, very, very fine house, and there's ways to get in. Well, I'm not going to get into a discussion on the nuance of what a law enforcement officer does. Typically, though, if they haven't harmed anybody, if they haven't damaged any property, and if they haven't committed any crime, I don't think a cop would ask for your ID. He has no business talking to you. But we're talking about something entirely different. We're talking about when the rules of engagement, if you will, with law enforcement, and they are trained by it, and they live up to it, that generally stands behind the rules of, as I stated, if there's no purpose for the cop to ask for an ID, he's not going to ask for an ID. And when he does ask for an ID, if there's a purpose, then he will note if the guy can speak English or not, because he might want to then take it further. Now, see, I don't want to be talking through my tailbone, because I don't know about that from a legal standpoint, but for me, that's the sensibility of it. That's how I read the sensibility of it. All right, let me come back here, folks. You're listening to Tony Venuti, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. I mean, we got to get past this economy stuff. It's our moral imperative, or the lack thereof. Be right back.
Going out to shoot my old lady. You know Jimi Hendrix playing the music of the counterculture, the anti-establishment. Now the anti-establishment's in charge, and they're claiming to be the establishment, but the only way they know how to govern is by being against everything, by being anti-authority, by not having respect for authority, and yet they're the authority. Go figure that one out. See how twisted up it is? It's confusing, isn't it? But just to get back to Volpe about the idea of police and trusting authorities, we have to, in a civilization, trust our system of laws. We have to trust, we have to entrust people to uphold our laws, and we have to be vigilant when they go off course. Well, there is a recourse. It's just that we have so much corruption nowadays because the lack of morality has brought the whole culture down. See, it's the culture that brought this corruption into, it's bad than it was 40 years ago. It's no longer to serve and protect as much as it is to intimidate and control, isn't it? I got that, man. I tell you, when these red light cameras came out 2 years ago, I got 7 tickets in a month. I had a suspended license twice, once for a year and once for a half a year, all because of over-candid government. So I get it. But that doesn't mean that I fault the idea of law and order. Key word that you don't hear with law very much is order. Well, I woke up this morning to an interesting clip on Fox News that apparently this video audio that I'm going to share with you was all over Twitter and was pulled off. And I guess because it was pulled off, it made a big stink. But this is if I wanted America to fail. This is real good.
If I wanted America to fail, to follow, not lead, to suffer, not prosper, to despair, not drink, to start with energy, I'd cut off Americans with market teeth. I wouldn't take it by force. So I'd make Americans feel guilty about using the energy that heats their homes, fuels their cars, runs their businesses, and powers their economy. I make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. I would empower unelected bureaucrats, all but outlaw America's most abundant source of energy. After banning its use in America, I make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. If I wanted America to fail, I use their schools to teach one generation of Americans that their factories and their parks will have a new higher education. And I muster a straight face so I can teach the next generation that their hearts will be warm. When it's cold out, I call it cold. I can find that American cities are back. Run and power and wishes. I teach children how to ignore the hypocrisy of condemning logging, mining, and farming, buying roofs over their heads, heat in their homes, and food on their table. I would never teach children to the freedom of the only establish a middle class and free by prosperity and I see my prosperity in the government, but they will not be, but they will never have. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations and sell them in the world. It'd be so complicated that only bureaucrats, lawyers, and lawyers could understand them. At least small businesses with big ideas would stay in the chain. And I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earth those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the laws of supply and demand, I'd have the sympathetic media to drown them out. If I wanted America to fail, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracy seated in distant capital to bully American out of their dreams and their prosperity. I'd have federal agents to raid guitar factories for using the wrong kind of wood. I'd force homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I'd make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I think that it's false. I devise efficient products like clothing brands. You trade in an imaginary market. I convince people that this would create jobs and be good for the economy. If I wanted America to fail, and for every concern I invent a crisis, and for every crisis I invent a fault, I'm shutting down entire industries and killing tens of thousands of jobs. And then they would say, spot it out. And let everyone learn the stunning irony that the owls were victims of their larger cousins and not the people. It would already be decades too late. If I wanted America to fail, I'd make it easier to stop commerce at the start, easier to kill jobs than create some fashion to invent success that is seeking. When industries seek to create jobs, I'd file lawsuits to stop them, and then I'd make taxpayers pay for my lawyers. If I wanted America to fail, I would transform the environmental agenda from undocumented conservation to an economic solution. I'd empty the entire industry to our economic rivals by imposing regulations that are not true. And I'd celebrate those who preach environmental austerity in public and result in a lavish lifestyle. I convince Americans that you had the right. If I wanted America to fail,
I wanted America to fail. Sorry, that was a little bit sloppy. I'm going to get you that link right here, gang. But that was excellent, wasn't it? Wasn't that absolute? This got 517,000 thousand views so far. 16,000 like it. 1,700 don't. Now, can you figure this out for me? How does somebody not like this? You know? How does somebody not like this? If I wanted America to fail. People say, how come Obama's doing this? I don't understand it. I want you to remember something. If I wanted America to fail, ask yourself that one question when you can't figure out why the administration is being just too stupid. Are they stupid? Or are they dumb like a fox, huh? I think I've got the answer. I've known the answer for quite some time. I've been watching the spoiled children I hang out with on the good part of town, you know, on the wrong side of the street. It was ridiculed, you know. You Italian guy. Hey, you got no money. Hey, we're rich. My parents are rich. We're the judge. We're the attorney. We're the doctors. Get out of here. Oh, by the way, you want to play on my baseball team? We need to win, but you can't go home with me. I've been watching these kids since the 50s, since the 60s and the 70s. I've been watching them go up against our National Guard in colleges while I was over Vietnam fighting. I watched them as they would be profiled in shows like the All in the Family, where the student was forever going to live at home and just be a forever student. Ah, liberalism shot up through the 70s with Jimmy Carter. It went ballistic. It's the incrementalization. It's the exponential growth going at the speed of light. We've had exponential liberalism since the 70s. And we're just now waking up. Is this the Titanic without the watch, watching for the iceberg? Is this the canary in the mine shaft? Well, I don't know where I was going with the canary in the mine shaft, but I don't think there's any dispute. And this particular video is getting all kinds of play in the media. That's going to be good, because that's going to be a talking point. Use those words. If you wanted America to fail, would you act any different than Obama is doing right now? If you wanted America to fail. You can see everything Obama is doing is for the one purpose of wanting America to fail. Wasn't he born and bred into the idea of a communist sociology kind of deal? You know, I'm a firm believer that there's a lot of resentment for us, the left's ability to train our children from the 50s and the 60s, and for the parents to train their children and their children's children to train their children. And 50 years later, we've got this big understanding that we're bad. America's just bad. It's locked them down a little bit. They're just too big for their britches. You know, I've got a feeling ever since the industrialization of America, to which, how shall I say, proved to the world that we were the cat's meow, that there was no other nation on this earth that could come close to our innovation, to our ambition, to our willingness to take care of those that can't take care of those, and being so foolish as to further take care of those, not taking care of those. Politically speaking, I'm talking about all of these brats we throw around through foreign aid, from which I don't know why we're doing it. I don't see we're getting anything in return, unless you wanted America to fail. I don't know why we gave up the Panama Canal, unless we wanted America to fail. I don't know why we gave our trade secrets away from the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, all of our intellectual knowledge, unless we wanted America to fail. I don't know why we gave up NASA, unless we wanted America to fail. Boy, is this simple, huh? A few key Google questions, and I'll have a full synopsis. I could make a YouTube video. I could make it last forever. If I wanted America to fail, what would you do? If you wanted America to fail, what would you do different than Obama? He doesn't need any help, does he? Talking about the left has no shame, KJ says they'll die rather than humble themselves. Absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, you know, they're the quintessential spoiled children I grew up with. I grew up with these because I used to get in fist fights with them. Or wrestling matches, more like it. My daddy makes more money than your daddy. Oh, well, whoopee-doo, get the heck out of here, you clown. Small minds, I've been paying attention to it ever since I've been able to understand it, which was too early in my book. So now they're caught. Now they're in the White House, and they've got their power, and they try to show how they can do things good their way, but I think they had more fun. It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like looking for a woman. I don't know whether it's the kill or the hunt, you know? Once you find one, it's all of a sudden it's like, oh boy, wait a minute. Wasn't it more fun just hunting? Wasn't it more fun being, at least it was for me. It's not the kill, it's the hunt. Well, I think that's what liberalism is like in terms of hunting for power. I think they're more in tune to have more fun if they're not quite there yet. If they can reject it all, and they're the ones that are always saying they're the oppressed. The left needs to be the oppressed, right? Oh, so they can rebel against the oppressor. They have to be the oppressed. Can I understand? Isn't this like King of the Hill? Aren't they King of the Hill right now? Aren't liberals King of the Hill right now? How can they say they're oppressed? You see, it's a false paradigm. They're still trying to lead from the past instead of lead from the future. The idea of racial profiling, there is no racism anymore when every player in the NBA is black, 95%, when every player of the NBA is black. Come on, man, where's the oppression? Give me a break, okay? Now, if you call me a racist, you're by definition a racist yourself. See, I told you so. It takes one to know one, right? But as you heard me speak, I believe that racist is a natural thing. I think the paradigm is false. That's an invalid premise, that of being a racist. Absolute invalid paradigm. Familia, family, the same. Similarity. It's only human nature to be more comfortable with those that are similar to you. I don't say own kind, because it's not even about the kind, is it? It's really about similar. my golden lab is getting all these laying down next to me here. He's about 12 years old. He's starting to get that white, you know, now. His coat isn't yellow anymore, and he's got those white whiskers going in. And I'm having to give him some doggy aspirin, you know. He's starting to lip. I think he might have a year or two. I don't like putting dogs down, man. It's sad, but I'll just put them down. I sing to them in their ear and lullaby them out. You know, I'm not going to let them live in any kind of discomfort. Then what am I doing the same? It feels like that way sometimes, doesn't it? I think we all have that concern, but life is too much of a gift. No, it's just too cool. Even when it's bad, it's good, isn't it? As long as you got your health, really, I think. If I wanted America to fail. Oh, golly. And then you got this Obama dog-eat-dog stuff, right? I guess be careful what you put down in your paper. You know, what, he had two books out before he was 50 years old or something? He talked about eating dog. I think it's come back to haunt him a little bit. Talk about dog-eat-dog, right? There's all kinds of stuff on Facebook that's sort of cute looking at, you know? One has Obama with a big butcher knife chasing the dog on the White House lawn. Matt, I see. I see the trick bag that we've been putting. I'm watching it. It's the whole idea of, you know, you got it better than all these people. Look how victimized they've been. Look at all the things that we've done to them. That we should pay back. Done to them. Look at all the things we've done to them. Them being somebody in the past. We being us now. Look at all we've done to them. Look at all we've done to them. We now to those in the past. We didn't do anything. Okay, say I did. Say I did in the here and now. Did something to them way back when. You mean to tell me that we're a country where we want to tax our death inheritance at 50%, that you're going to tell me 10 generations later that we are the descendants of those that were supposedly done something to? Huh? This is such a false paradigm. We are so far removed from the victims. The victims are so far dead from those currently in the United States who, because of the things that were done by America, are now better off. Don't you think the descendants of slaves are better off now than if there was no slavery? Is that a bad question to ask? Come on, man. You're listening to Tony Venuti, folks, with your ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona. So here I am with this job. You know, I'm still fighting with this job stuff. I'm still fighting. I went to a job fair. They had about six companies represented that were actually looking for work. One was a collection agency. One was a cab company. One was a telecommuting call center. Another was an insurance company. And I couldn't apply to any of them because of my criminal record and my driving history. You know, I went up to the DES guy and says, you know, when I got out of prison in 85, if it wasn't for me starting my own business, I probably would have gone back to prison within those years, but I found myself a way to make a living, and I did. But now I'm out, and gosh, I forget of who I really was back then because I can't get a job. I said, what do you do with all the people that have criminal backgrounds or have tattoos or anything like this? He says, oh man, we see that all the time. I said, how come it isn't talked about? How come it isn't talked about? Anyway, this is Tony Venuti, folks, with your ex-conservative radio hour from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. I'll be right back.
This is a man's world, but it would be nothing, nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl. You see, man makes a car to take us over the road. The heaven low. Man made the light to light to take us out of the dark. And man made the boat for the water. Like my Bible said, Noah made the ark. This is a man's world. Ow! But it wouldn't make nothing.
This is Tony Venuti, folks, back at you with your ex-conservative radio hour. That was James Brown in Paparazzi, and it's a man's world, where I was just stating that pretty soon it's going to be run by gays, geeks, and girls. I really do believe it. 727, friend or foe, buddy?
We home in the edges listening? Okay, we have just a listener there. I'm sorry about that. This is Tony Venuti, folks, with your ex-conservative radio, and I've got a little treat here for you. This is Victoria Jackson with "There's a Communist Living in the White House."
These days I'm in a haze, and I can't concentrate on things, can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete, and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully when I get White House. I bite my lip a lot and stitch it with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. This communist freak has a White House! My husband really misses me. My parents think I've gone crazy. Only Gornbeck understands me. And of course, Sean Hannity and Huckabee. But, you know, besides those three and the sweet people who drink the tea, there is no one else who can see the communist living in the White House. Now, you may say, do I have any evidence to support my supposition? And I will say, where do you want me to start? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was, his father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe Plummer on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx and that other guy. He appointed Van Jones to be his Green Jaw star. Van Jones is a purported communist, now a capitalist, would never appoint a communist advisor. His church of 20 years was with Jeremiah Wright preaching with black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry. Now he's trying to jam down our throat socialized medicine and the cap and trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? I'm jittery, my teeth I grate, I twitch, I shake, I ruminate. Lately I'm perplexed and pinched in pain, I pout and ponder. Good alliteration. Maybe I have lost my mind or have been drugged by some narcotic. Maybe I'm in a movie called 1984 or I'm just idiotic. But if I am in a dream, fast asleep, I think I will just try to keep my eyes shut till this goes away and I awake to a happier day when my ukulele does not play this song of dire distress and dismay. This song called "There's a Communist Living in the White House." There's a communist living in the White House. There's a communist, everybody living in the White House. Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. What are we
going to
do about it?
Yeah, that's Obama. What are you going to do about it? So what are you going to do about it? You know, that's how I see Obama's way of leading. So what are you going to do about it? You know, just like street thug antics, okay? That's what that is. What are you going to do, pal? You want to go outside? You bring a knife, I'll bring a gun. You bring a gun, I'll bring a cannon. You bring a cannon, I'll bring a missile. You bring a missile, I'll bring a nuclear weapon. That was Victoria Jackson from Saturday Night Live fame. She's got quite a few of those type of conservative. She's good, isn't she? She's kind of like cute, too. She plays that ditzy blonde. And here's this ditzy blonde telling us what we should be knowing. But what are we going to do about it, huh? What are we going to do about it? Nothing. KJ says, do slave descendants have it better because of slavery? Well, because of slavery, they are descendants of slaves. And because the slavery is what brought blacks to America in bulk, you got to think that if that didn't happen, there wouldn't be blacks here to the degree that they are. And that they wouldn't have had an opportunity in which to excel and live a much higher lifestyle than their descendants currently in Africa. I don't have to go any deeper than that, do I?
whole thing about liberals fear responsibility, that's precisely right. They don't fear responsibility. They don't accept it. They fear, they sense that you can do any damn thing you want. You can get away with it. Lie, cheat, and steal. There's no moral imperative. It's the antithesis of good. Just like the opposite of good is bad. Just like the opposite of virtue is evil. The opposite of conservatives is liberal or libertarian. They're the same. You ever notice how these Ron Paul bots are sort of very similarly behaved as in terms of the liberals? I mean, you don't see them jumping over to Ron. You know, everybody's thinking about now, Ron, the left is really surprised that Santorum, for instance, went to bat for Romney after he got out. And now it looks like Newt might, right? They're just amazed that we're able to keep our promises. Wow. How about that, man? No, it's the night out at the nightclub on Tuesday night where bad boy conservatives would want to be out because you're not supposed to be out those nights. Tuesday, Wednesday, you're supposed to be sleeping, going to school, going to work, you know, succeeding in life. What are you doing staying out at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, Wednesday, unless you're up to no good? I didn't want to go out on the weekends because that's when all the amateurs came out and acted like they were bad. And if everything was made okay, if all this badness was made to be okay, every night would be like at the weekend at the nightclub. And there'd be no fun anymore. There'd be no contrast. There'd be too many. We live in such interesting times, don't we? Every time I get frustrated, I come full circle. May we live in interesting times. This is really as simple as that. You know, I used to think I could trust the media. My naivete thinking when Nixon went down, because, you know, I was a Democrat. Most of us younger ones were Democrats. Most of us that came from a working class environment were Democrats. But again, you remember how you were when you were 20 and 30 and 40? You really didn't put your whole heart and soul into all this, did you? You didn't give a whole lot of thought. You just had a generic understanding. It's Ronald Reagan. You're going to like this. If I can get it to play.
The story isn't over. You and the audience are part of the conflict.
Oh, that's nice, Tony. Folks, here we go. What am I doing now? Okay, maybe we got to go now. Okay.
More human beings were slaughtered in the 20th century than all previous centuries combined. We're talking congressional records, 135 million dead. Their entire purpose was to
Well, I'm having a difficult time, folks. I apologize for that. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio hour.
Any moral anchors whatsoever. If you look at the changes in America since 1960, perhaps, the whole culture.
All right, I'm giving up. I'm giving up on that one because I kept on now. Uh-huh, good. Tony Venuti having technical difficulties. Even I can't make technical difficulties entertaining. All right, maybe I should take a break. Maybe I should just take a break. Be right back.
It was raining hard in Frisco. I needed one more fare to make my night. A lady up ahead waved to flag me down. She got in at the light. Oh, where you going to, my lady blue? It's a shame you ruined your gown in the rain. She just looked out the window. She said, 16 Parks, I think. Something about her was familiar. I could swear I'd seen her face before. But she said, I'm sure you're mistaken. And she didn't say anything more. It took a while, but she looked in the mirror. Then she glanced at the license for my name. A smile seemed to come to her slowly. It was a sad smile, just the same. And she said, how are you, Harry? I said, how are you, Sue? Through the too many miles and the too little smiles, I still remember you. Somewhere in a fairy tale, I used to take her home in my car. We learned about love in the back of a Dodge. The lesson hadn't gone too far. You see, she was gonna be an actress, and I was gonna learn to fly. She took off to find the footlights. I took off to find the sky. Whoa, I've got something inside me to drive a princess blind. There's a wild man wizard, he's hiding in me. In my mind. Oh, I've got something inside me, not what my life's about, 'cause I've been letting my outside drive me over till my time runs out.
Well, another man might have been
and she walks away in silence. It's strange how you never know, but we'd both gotten what we'd asked for such a long, long time ago. You see, she was gonna be an actress, and I was gonna learn to fly. She took off to find the footlights, I took off for the sky. And here she's acting happy inside her handsome home, and me, I'm flying in my taxi, taking tips and getting stoned. I go flying so high when I'm stoned.
Welcome back, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radar. Speaking about racism here, we've got racism in the NBA, don't we? What's his name? Jay Lynn? We've got somebody referring to a comment on the block, but I'm not Chinese, but I cheer for Jeremy Lin. Why? Because he broke through the stereotype that Asian Harvard-educated kids can't play a predominantly black sport. Imagine basketball being called a predominantly black sport. It was invented in the early 1900s in Springfield, Massachusetts. The first basketball rim was a vegetable basket, primarily, predominantly a black sport. Yeah. This article titled, Some Black People Need to Stop Being Jealous of Asian Athletes. Oh, gosh. We get more things to be jealous of, don't we? Than someone's athletic prowess, really. You know, this whole thing about being jealous over somebody because they got a good voice and they can sing or they can dance or they can play a sport. Maybe it's jealousy that they don't have to work for a living. I think they ought to reverse it to where the more you enjoy doing something, the less you get paid. You know, work is when you prefer to be doing something else, in my view. Work is when you prefer to be doing something else. So if you like what you do and you really, 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 really like what you do, why are you looking for more money? You know you'd still be doing it if the system was set up. Unions again. You can't blame unions all the time. Unions are a natural extension of drivers, those that make it happen. It's only natural law that you have two sides to this employment coin. You got the boss, right? You got the innovator. You got the entrepreneur. He kind of makes it happen, right? He found a need, filled it, found a way to make a profit, wanted to do more of it because he was greedy. So he needed employees. Oh, that greedy bum. He needed more employees to do more work. So, but see, unfortunately, capitalism without virtue is doomed for failure. This from Ayn Rand's mouth. And I thoroughly agree. Because if you think about it, if it was for virtue and morality, we wouldn't need a whole lot of laws, would we? If we all followed the rules of morality, virtue, we wouldn't need any other laws, would we? But greed is part of our human characteristic. No matter what side of the fence you're on, no matter who you are, you have some in you to some degree. You either articulate, suppress, Well, you've dealt with it. You know, you mitigate it. Greed isn't bad. It's to the degree of which makes it bad. Greed actually is a good thing in many ways, just like fear is in many ways. Not always. And capitalism takes advantage of greed. Capitalism says greed is okay. Capitalism says greed is rational when there's virtue behind it, when there's a moral imperative behind it, when there's a purpose behind it. The greatest capitalists are caregivers. They provide a need that isn't in existence, like these titans of industry. Whether it was, you know, electricity, whether it was the railroads, whether it was coal, whether it was the steel, these titans of industry made it happen because there was a desire to do that which we couldn't do on our own. These titans of industry had to put a lot of people to work. But, you know, there's a thing here that says, yeah, but, you know, I got to be careful. Here I am, the owner of this railroad. Here I am, I got to get these workers. I'm only getting so much money in. I want to pay these workers as little as possible. I want to, see, without any kind of moral imperative, without any kind of decency, it's really easy to look down upon others as almost like animals and say, hey, look at that, but for me, they wouldn't be making the 5 cents an hour that I'm paying them. If it wasn't for me. Uh-huh. Really? My mother worked at the International Lady Garment Workers Union, ILGWU, out of Boston, Brockton, Mass. And she was making piecework. She wasn't an hourly worker. If she sat and went to the bathroom, she wasn't making money when she went to the bathroom. If she went outside to smoke a cigarette, she wasn't getting paid to go outside and smoke a cigarette. Every zipper she set, she was a zipper setter, a belt maker. But she worked as the go-between the owner of the shop, Vicento Sportswear, and the workers by negotiating the price for the piecework, so that the owner could judge what was fair. And the union had in place a mediation tool, if you will. And the mother had enough tough love in her that she was also the sample maker. See, she was really the best stitcher in there. My mom was the best. My mother was better than your mother. That isn't what I heard in the 50s, but I bet you that's what you'll be hearing these days. My mother makes more money than your mother. Oh, no, don't stay home and takes care of us. Telling you, it's upside down, baby. World's going to hell in a handbasket. I know, Ma, I'm not supposed to be using words like that, but that's from 50 years ago. Give me a... I told you, I channeled my mother. She sort of sits on my shoulder, you know. Sometimes I forget she's here, but she... how can I? She always told me right from the very beginning, I don't care. You're alone. I don't care what you do. I want to find out about it. It might not be today. It might not be tomorrow. It might be next week. It might be next year. And I'll give it to you twice as hard when I finally find out. But this whole paradigm of virtue and capitalism and one not in possession of the other is the reason that the natural offset to that is somebody representing the person that the owner is trying to pay as little as possible, okay? But there's the other side of the paradigm. You can believe that it's inherent human nature for the worker to do as little as he can and get paid as much as he can. These are the two opposing dynamics. The boss wants to pay you as little as possible for you to do as much as possible. The worker wants to do as little as possible and get paid as much as possible. And there the two shall meet. Huh? Now, if it wasn't for unions, to empower the worker. You're not going to have the sense, you're not going to have a bunch of pipe fitters, you're not going to have a bunch of machinists, you're not going to have a bunch of stitchers, you're not going to have a bunch of, you know, laborers get together and say, hey, wait a minute, well, which one of us should take a lead here and do what Tony is just talking about here, I'm reading here. No, what happened was somebody came in, it's called a union. And what I've since been learning, what I've since come to see is the fact that unions was actually an offset of communism, wasn't it? The class system. If we just wasn't all so dumb. If people in general just weren't so dumb as to not have to need an intermediary to be able to say, hey, man, let's all pull together. There's 20 of us doing this job for the boss here. Without us 20 doing a pretty good job, that boss wouldn't be making what he's making, including the profits that he's making. Let's all band together and come with empowered. But see, there's the deal, right? You're fired. You're all fired. Well, maybe that's the risk you take. Maybe that boss doesn't want to go out of business for a week or two or three and have the heartache. Maybe you're being fair with him, and you're coming at it from the perspective of, come on, man, I only want what's fair. But people are smart. I mean, yes, yeah, stick with it, Tony. Okay, we're not smart. We're stupid. Too many of us. We're emotional, man. We're reactionary, not actionary. I mean, isn't it about the chicken and egg question, really? Who made the NBA? The NBA, the players make the NBA? Did the NBA all of a sudden happen broke because a bunch of players showed up one day and say, hey, let's form some teams, huh? Or did somebody go out and make a risk at something, take a risk, spend money they didn't know they were going to get in return? You know, isn't the American dream simply doing the very best you can do for yourself? Huh? And just because others can't match to you, all of a sudden people get jealous and they say, wait a minute, I want some social justice here. Oh, really? You want some social justice, do you? Okay, I'll give you some social justice. Take it on down, maybe. Not with me. I'll be right back.
He had white horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. And feathers, they made up his bed, a gold-covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
Ooh, what a love.
Back, folks. This is Tony Venuti telling to you what we've been learning from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Sort of half-truths and no-truths, so help me God. We've been lied to. We talk about myths as if they're a negative thing. Well, like everything else, it's, are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? Are you a good myth or are you a bad myth? Myths are stories about the wisdom of life. What we learn in school isn't about the wisdom of life. Wisdom is that combination of, you know, experience and age and knowledge. The American dream. The American dream. We're talking about a myth evolved, huh? What is the American dream? Do you think that's been overstated, the American dream? Do you think it's been used, manipulated? I think so. I mean, I know so. The American dream. Come on, the American dream, it to be real, had to be the dream of the people that came to this country before there ever was an America. That had to be the dream they're talking about when they say the American dream, right? And I said, what are they dreaming about? And they're, oh, yeah, maybe one they can build for themselves. Yeah, a new home. Everybody should have one. Everybody should have the ability to build the home of the land they're standing on if it isn't already claimed. How about that? Yeah, maybe they did have an American dream. Maybe they did have an American dream that they wanted all a home, but one that they built on their land. Or maybe the American dream was, I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Win, lose, or draw, I want to be able to fail. Why can't I fail already? Let me fail. Let me swing at the bat. I don't want to take a call third strike, thank you. Boy, is that a double entendre? You're talking about strikes, labor, unions, people, workers. Hey, comrade, Kimo Sabe. No, it's comrade. But Superman, no, it's comrade. That's how exceptionalism is, that we determine what's best for us. So the title of the show today is Obama's big gulp. I think he got twice this week with the Supreme Court. Huh? Do you think he has an overstated ambition? Do you think his self-worth is in need of a little tweaking? If you tell anyone, whether it's the news media telling a populace, or whether it's a bunch of people telling a baby as they grow up, you can tell them anything you want to do, and if you repeat it enough, they'll believe it, right? Well, Obama, I think he believes he's like the second coming of Christ. I mean, the guy is way over his head. But it's all about the handlers, isn't it? It isn't about Obama. Do you think, come on, we all know this is big stuff we're talking about. There's an enemy among us, and it's ourselves. We've had it so good, we don't know what bad is, and now that bad's acting like it's good, we don't know it's bad. I mean, we do, me, my audience, I am my audience, that which is attracted to you, describes you. I'm talking about the metaphorical, all you idiots out there. And then to the degree that you hear the likes of, oh, really, O'Reilly. Oh, really, O'Reilly. Speak about pop culture not being owned by the left. That pop culture is indeed subjected to us all, even on the right. Oh, really? Oh, really, O'Reilly? I mean, I'll tell you what. You live in that bubble. And, you know, don't tell me you walked in the Circle K.
Well, let's not go there. I don't want to sound like others. I'm human. I can sound like others really pretty easily, I guess. But we'll put that in check for now. No, I think what we have is the culmination of a series of events that have been well put into place. All roads lead back to Marxism.
It's the culture, stupid! Gosh, they're telling us the economy, really? I mean, it's the economy for me because I don't have a job and I'm desperately looking for one. But in terms of, you know, half the reason I can't get a job is because I'm discriminated against because I'm supposedly white. I'm discriminated against because I'm male. I'm discriminated against because I'm 60. Oh, there's all kinds of misplaced imperatives that are making this country what it is. It has to do with morality or the lack thereof. It has to do with morality. It's not everything one can do because one can. It's everything one can do because one should. But it's that should and could thing that that gets in the way, isn't it? You have to evaluate what's the first reason anybody does anything is they're able to. That's the first reason. Clinton had it right. And yeah, you might have thought he was flipping. You might have thought he was smug. But when the final assessment is, why did he do it? Because he could. You know, it's like you feed a dog and they'll keep eating. It's only because they can. They'll stop eating only when you don't put more in their tray, right? Oh, not your dogs? Okay. Oh, yours have been trained? Yeah. Well, my dogs are house trained. You know, they go outside and I go pick up after them. And they call when they walk away from me and come right around. And they can kick their butt. You don't think I smack my dog around every now and again? Very rarely, but I don't mind giving him a love tap on his little butt if he doesn't pay attention. The same way I would spank a child gladly with love in my heart. Not because it's fun. No, it's not how you punish a child. It's why you punish a child. How is secondary to why. Kid knows when it deserves it. Okay? If typically a boy needs their attention to be had and you need to give him a swift kick up the butt, then you do so, man. You do so. Although, you know, it takes a child to run a community now. Since women have come into the workforce and trying to be equal to men, what they've done is diminish the family. Working women have diminished the family. That's all. It's taken jobs away from the male. It takes the primary jobs away from the male who isn't going to be able to leave work for maternity, who isn't going to be able to not lift 100 pounds because they're weaker. We're not going to have to make any concessions for men, but we're going to have to make concessions for women. Meanwhile, the feminists don't make concessions for humanity. Who's bringing up the children? Oh, I see. That's the community again. That's right. I'm sorry. We transferred responsibilities. That's right.
I can't remember that.
Oh, that was the deal, wasn't it? Hey, ladies, come on. You come in. You be a feminist. You drive that liberal flag, baby. You drive that liberal flag, and you just make sure that it's the community that it takes to bring up a child. And you understand that all too well, don't you? Because now that you can't take care of your own child. It's a man's world? I don't think so. It should be. I mean, of course it should be. Because we're the ones going to take a bullet for you. We're the ones going to take a bullet for you. Come on. You're the ones going to take a bullet for me. You're the one that's going to get the lifeboat, not me. So as I hear these discussions on the liberal media, and it's all liberals, they're redundant. Is the liberal media redundant? Well, you know, we got the glass ceiling. You know, I had this tourism industry that I did with Arizona Tourist News for 20 years. Do you know I couldn't break the ceiling? I couldn't get into those groups all run by women, women executive directors, executive directors, executive directors. All women, all female. And you know, the thing about female is just like gay men, just like liberalism, we are trained or they are trained to be emotionally responsive. What's your reaction, the media will ask you every last time? Ashwin says, man, he says, who else is going to prepare those hips for giving birth? That's right, they went there for no reason. You know, there's a certain natural law here that you don't want to mess with Mother Nature. Liberals know that really good with their conservatism or conservationism. See, that word gets me all mixed up. See, I need to co-op another word, conservationism. I mean, you hear about the bird strikes now with the planes? Did you hear about the little story out there that's because of environmental laws, there are now more birds around the airports, and since the environmentalists have started, you know, and they're communists, aren't they? Aren't they straight up communists, environmentalists? Of course they are. They're talking about how the birds now are causing more plane crashes. It's up like 20 or 30%. See, there's all these unintended consequences. It's all like the Twilight Zone, man. When you mess with Mother Nature, you're really screwing up. And when you're too smart for your own good, when you have more education that's essentially programming, and the inability to think for yourself using logic, reason, and deduction, whereas when you wasn't blessed with the gift of noesis that contains virtue so you can think, when all you have is the ability to talk and use your rhetoric, you're dangerous. You are downright dangerous. That thing's twisted up so bad, we don't know what's up. It's up. We don't even know how to write it. We don't even know where it was to begin with and how it got that way. It's almost like a 600-thread count sheet trying to put it back together with your hands, you know, trying to work all the little fibers, putting everything right where they belong. But it's all part of it, you know. It's all meant to confuse us, you know, throw our hands up in disgust, you know, like Atlas Shrugged, right? Like, wow, it's like every man for himself, it's some ship. Now, Obama's big gulp might choke for a day or two until he gets his composure. I mean, talk about a 1-2 punch. The healthcare man, the healthcare man at the Supreme Court,
in Arizona's law on immigration? Oh, is that one?
Identify evil.
Do you think a measure of goodness, as I see it, is that which you appreciate in cherish the life of children? We talk about the American dream like it's something you buy at a five and dime that all of a sudden we've been given the right to own. But I've always seen life as through the eyes of hope and dreams of a child and what they can become, what a child can become. The goodness, being able to take something so precious and turn it into the greatest human being known to mankind. But what do you think about people who use children? What do you think about people who take away the hopes and dreams of children? What do you think about people that turn certain children into victims and make them feel less than valued, less than worthy of self-esteem, less than worthiness of what they can bring to their own selves? What do you make of that? I think that's pretty bad. When you think about the education of a child, that stands right in front of you when you talk about the grace of children and their hopes for their future. I've talked about my understanding to the incrementalization of a deliberate attempt, I believe, that I've been witness to for 50 years unwittingly, knowing full well that there's people up there pulling strings against the best interests of mankind. I told you about sitting next to Albert DeSalvo in Walpole State Prison after my first tour of duty inside of a prison where the first week inside what they showed us for a film, what they showed us for entertainment, was The Longest Yard. Not only did it celebrate negative behavior and criminal behavior, but it essentially celebrated the idea about being antagonistic with prison guards. So I looked at this and I slid down in my chair. I remember it. Here I was, 21 years old, and I said to myself, I get it. This is all just but one little game. But one little game. What we have here is the education czar from years gone by. Talk about this is Charlotte Ezerby, deliberately dumbing down of our culture, and this is her firsthand account of it.
My name is Charlotte Thompson Ezerby, and I served as senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education under the Reagan administration, during which I had access to all of the most important documents for the restructuring of not only American education, but global education. And I'm also the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which gets into all of this, gives the background of what I saw not only in the Department of Education, but as a local school board member. I was trained to identify the resistors. The resistors to the sex ed, drug ed, alcohol ed, suicide ed, death ed, those good, smart Americans who realize that anything that has education hanging off the end of it is probably not what they're looking for. I was trained to identify those good people and to go up against them and actually to go and try to get them to join us through the group process system, make them feel important, get them on a committee. And when that just blew my mind. I have to say, people often ask me, what is it that got you involved in education? Well, finding out what I saw at the local level certainly upset me. When I went and I saw that Americans were being trained to identify resistors, then I got pretty upset. And luckily, there was a big book that came with the in-service training called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. And I was able to take that back home with me. Unbelievable examples of how to con the Christians and different people who are upset with what you're trying to do, how to bring them over to your side, case studies, true case studies of educators who had put programs in that normally, in a normal American town, nobody would want them. How did they manage to get them in? How did they con the people? And the other thing was, not only was I trained to identify the resistors, I was trained to go to the important people, high-profile, highly thought-of people in the community with the Rotary, Chamber of Commerce, Garden Club, you name it, the different groups in our towns. go to them and convince them of the importance of these new programs like sex ed, drug ed, I just mentioned all of them, and get them on your side, because when you can get the leadership in a community to go along with it, then the newspaper comes in and says, you know, a committee's been set up with the head of the Rotary and this and that, and they're all getting behind this task force to discuss whether we're going to have a new sex education program. And then when Mary Jones, you know, who ordinarily would think, why would we want to have a sex education program when we don't have any problems with kids having sex or anything, so she might be, you know, concerned. She might be one of the resistors. She reads that her best friend, who's the head of the garden club, is on this committee, and she thinks, oh, well, hey, Mary Appleton is on that committee. She's heading it up. Must be okay. So I was taught really how to con the community. They always call everybody by the first name. You have to get very, you know, affectionate with people and say, William, you know, I'm so glad you've come to this meeting, and I understand your concerns about this program because, you know, I've had other people. Usually it's the really bright people in the community who have these concerns. And would you like to join our group? The original program was funded by my what would subsequently become my office. It was funded by the Office of Research in the U.S. Office of Education. It was funded early on, about the late 60s. Still funded, by the way. And the money went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to a professor by the name of Ronald Havelock. And he was the one that put together the whole training, the whole seminar, the book. And in the back of the book you had, they admitted it, right in the back of the book, they had about 100 major change agents listed from all over the country. Some of them I recognize, some I still don't, but some I do. And so this was a very important project. And it was being, you know, it was being carried out in our, I'm sure, all over the country, not just where I was. This was in Searsport, Maine, this lovely little town on the coast of Maine, in the school there where they were, where the guy came in, the facilitator, not Mr. Havelock, not Professor Havelock, but a facilitator, to train us. And these were good people that were there. You know, they were some of the teachers from my school, where I was on the local school board, principals, etc. Normal-looking Americans. You know, you really ask yourself, they must themselves have reacted very much the way I did. That's why I've always had a lot of understanding for teachers that have to go through this stuff. I didn't have to continue going through it. They've had to, through the years, constant training, retraining, sensitivity training, break their values. Right, no right, no wrong. You've got to have all religions represented, so, you know, tolerant of everything, and because that's the New World Order. Disorder, excuse me. Professor Benjamin Bloom is probably the most important behavioral psychologist ever to live. I mean, maybe not quite as much as Pavlov and Skinner, but he really implemented the system in education in the United States. And he was the author of the taxonomy of educational objectives. And I know that doesn't mean much to us. It means a lot to teachers. They know. All teachers have to go through that, Bloom's taxonomy. And just to give you an idea of how blatant they are, Benjamin Bloom said the purpose of education, and I often say this to parents, really, listen to this. You think the purpose of education is reading, writing, and arithmetic? The purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And then he goes on and he says, he defines good teaching, and this is even worse from the parental standpoint, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. And then in some of his works that I have, that are in my book, a lot of this stuff is in it.
Did he mean challenge? Did he mean challenge or did he mean change? Change
their fixed. Yeah, through challenging. It's through challenging. You go up against them, and you change them. And you ask a good question, because then he goes on in one part of the taxonomy that is in my book. He says that he can take a student from here to there, from a belief in God or his country, whatever, to being an atheist and not believing in his country in 1 hour. Oh, yeah, he does. And I've seen it with students. I've seen it with young people. And they don't even know, and teachers don't even know. That's why if you talk to teachers about it often, they'll really have an awfully hard time dealing with it. And if you go up to a superintendent, an educational administrator, superintendent or whatever, and you ask him or her, have you ever been through sensitivity training, they'll usually crack up because they went through it. They are the worst, those programs. I've been through them. I mean, how can anything be worse than some of the ones that the regular classroom has, but they're the worst. To bring about change, they put them through role-playing, psychodrama, all these psychological techniques where they play the part of starving children and the other one plays the part of a very wealthy, industrious child. And, you know, they bring about the attitude and value change through the emotions. You know how young people are. You know, they're naturally very altruistic and they want to help and they don't like to see poverty around the world. And so what they'll do is, just like I think I mentioned to you earlier, or I don't know whether I did, going into the teacher, putting in the new social studies program in our community and walking through, having taken little tots through town and identifying big, rich people's houses and small, poor people's houses. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Getting them young and making them feel sorry for the people who live in the trailer across from the captain's house because they only eat hot dogs, not steak. And then they'll do the same thing with Ethiopia or wherever, some third world country, showing them the children dying. And then they'll show pictures of our affluence. And what do you eat for breakfast? Oh, you have eggs and bacon and cereal and orange juice and grapefruit and everything. Yum, yum, yum. Do you really think it's fair? Common unity. That's what we call it, common unity. There's no role for the individual in the community. And for everything that goes on in the Soviet Union, or communism, is based on the community, the commune.
Collectivism and more. Boy, you want to talk about sinister stuff, huh? This is the kind of sinister stuff that is going on in our schools today, and you got it right here firsthand. It is like...
That make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. That would empower unelected bureaucrats to all but outlaw America's most abundant sources of energy. After banning its use in America, I make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. If I wanted America to fail, I'd use their schools to teach one generation of Americans with their factories and their costs. We'll have a new ice teacher. And I muster a straight face so I can teach the next generation that their cost of global warming. When it's cold out, I call it climate change. Then, I didn't find that American cities, in fact, run on wind power and wishes. I teach children how to ignore the hypocrisy of condemning logging, mining, and farming while having roofs over their heads, heat in their homes, and food on the tables. I would never teach children that the free market is the only force in human history. Let the poor establish the middle class and create my prosperity. And I demonize prosperity itself, but they will not end, but they will never end. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations and sell them handled. It would be so complicated that only bureaucrats, lawyers, and lobbyists could understand them. That would small businesses with big ideas would sustain the change. I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earthers those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the laws of supply and demand, I'd enlist the sympathetic media to drown them out. If I wanted America to fail, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracy seated in distant capital to bully Americans out of their dreams and their progress. I'd send federal agents to raid guitar factories for using the wrong kind of wood. I'd force homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I'd make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I'd invent false. I devised fictitious products like carbon credits and trade of an imaginary market. I convinced people that this would create.
Thanks a lot, folks. You've been listening to Tony Venuti. Look for you tomorrow. Have a nice day. Ciao.